podcast. Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Midnight Paco Podcast. As always, you can follow me at Justin Fuller Comedy on all platforms.
And I am the underscore great underscore C-O-R-E-E. That's where you can find me. Or you can find us both at the Midnight Paco Podcast.
That's right.
On Instagram. As you can see, we have a special guest.
That's right.
He is a fellow comic.
Yes.
He has a special out right now.
He does.
John Armstrong Against the World. Was that my part?
Or no, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. John Armstrong Against the World on all streaming platforms. It is the audio album. So check that out. Stream it like a million times and they'll give me like a fraction of a penny. So just put it on repeat and throw it in the corner. But it's the cover art, if you a hip hop head, is in the spirit of Tupac Me Against the World. That's right. And that's arguably the greatest, not just rap album, but album ever made that changed my life. And so it was kind of me paying homage to him. Nice. For me putting my first comedy album out.
Nice.
With that.
Where can they find you on platforms?
John Armstrong Comedy on Instagram, John Armstrong Facebook, John Armstrong on YouTube.
Website?
Website, John Armstrong Comedian.
Nice.
Yeah.
So to the Midnight Paco Podcast, brought to you in part by the Acumen Paralegal Services. Help you help yourself the legal way. The services that they offer, they help with documents that need to be tight. Guardianships, probate, divorce, wills and trusts, complaints, business organization, financial planning, and legal research and writing. Go ahead and give them a call at 216-727-0049 or 216-456-2000. Michelle White will get you right.
You know, it's funny that you said that, you know, that Tupac was an influence on your life, because I'm always saying that, you know, hip hop is very parallel to comedy. Like, yeah. Even the way you do comedy is like, you know, KRS-One said, you come out, you rock the mic, then you tell people who you are.
Yeah.
You know, you got to get the, you know, you like an MC, like a master of ceremony.
And it's very individualistic, too.
Yeah.
Like the way people describe it, like boxing or golf.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. You can have teams. Of course, you got like Wu-Tang and all these other people.
Right.
But still, at the end of the day, it's just you up there and you spitting. That's the other reason why, too, like, you can, you know, as comedians, we can bounce tags off each other, but ultimately, just like rap, it's why it's looked down upon if you have writers, because
Right. We're
not playing any instruments, I'm not doing any magic tricks, our skill is our intellect.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Our perspective.
So that's why it's very, very synonymous with a lot of shit in rap.
So I'm glad you mentioned that. So you said, you know, like having writers. Okay, now I just want to get your opinion on, how do you feel about comedians doing like stock jokes?
It depends. Like maybe this is my bias, because with newer comedians, it tends to like suck when you see them do it, because it looks so just packaged. But there are certain comedians, old school comedians, that would just do set up, knock down kind of jokes. But that was more in their repertoire anyway. But if you hear somebody saying a clearly repeated joke, then that's kind of shitty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's kind of, now sometimes you got to kind of pull somebody aside and let them know, because some people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't know the rules, so it ain't even like they trying to be shitty. They just, you ever hear that story Nick Cannon was talking about when he first started, and one of the first people that was around was Gary Owen. And he was saying how Gary Owen pulled him to the side because Nick Cannon was doing all these stock jokes. And Gary Owen was like, you can't do that. He was like, you know that's a joke. He's like, yeah, that's why I said it.
Yeah.
Like, but he didn't even know that you're not supposed to do
it.
Right. So I'll give grace to some people that maybe they don't know. You know what I mean?
But okay, so how long have you been doing?
We at 8.5.
Eight and a half. Nice.
How old are you? 45. I started a little later.
Yeah, shit. We started at 42.
Yeah. We're going on 4 years in the game.
Yeah. I mean, you get the bug when you get the bug.
I always wanted to do it.
Yeah,
but
I didn't know there was an avenue.
Right. And I was scared as fuck. And then, like, we're talking about having kids. I had my first son when I was 22. So once you can't go to your kid's mom, like, I quit my job at the restaurant and I'm going to be telling jokes.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know? Plus, I'm not going to, like, shit on her. She's a good person. But at the time, the nature of our relationship, if I would have told her that, she would have been like, she would have rolled her ass at me. Right. So it just wasn't the time for it.
No, I get it. I got that at this age.
I was 36. You kind of hit a midlife crisis because I had just got fired from this job and I already wasn't making good money and I was just bouncing around. I was like, at a certain point, I was like, I would rather fail at something that I really, really love than to keep doing these dumbass jobs. Because I do know some people who have decent jobs, and they're slaves to that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, even once the money come, you ain't happy?
Right,
So then I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to have to, I need purpose and I need happiness.
Yeah, see, I love, that's why I love comedians, because we all have that same mentality.
Yeah.
Like, we fuck working for somebody else. I can do it, but why?
If I'm going to be broke, I want to be broke and happy.
Yes.
Like, I'm not, what the fuck, like, I was talking to my girl and she got a good job, and I'll be teasing her because, I mean, I still work, comedy ain't paying 100% of the bills, I'm a bartender, but I've scaled that back. Like, I bartend 3, maybe 4 days of the week,
okay.
And I'll be fucking with my girl, because she'll come home, I'm like, damn, you long day at work again. She be mad at me. She got student loan debt and all this. Oh, I mean, of course, she got benefits. I need insurance again. Right. But still, just when I see the amount of the work that people be putting in, and she gets paid pretty good, but still, I'd be like, I'd be, you know, having a guy, you're covering more of the stuff, you know. And I think after a while you should, just because, if you can do it, you know what I mean? The more of a man that you are, the more of a woman they'll be for you.
Right,
they won't
right.
say that out loud.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's true.
So what would you say, like, who were some of your comedy influences? Like, who did you watch this that made you say, I want to do this or I can do this?
The first person, which not even so much their style, but it was just like, holy shit, was Martin Lawrence.
Okay.
I remember we didn't have cable when I was younger, but like my friends did and my cousins did. So they would make us VHS tapes. We were the same age.
They would make us VHS tapes,
clip it up, and then I would watch it like that. And Martin is...
the commercials for you?
Oh yeah, no.
That was dope.
Well, this was HBO anyway. You weren't getting commercials anyway. But like, Martin was as a host and just like in that crowd and the laughs you would get from that, like, you know, that famous Bernie Mac, I ain't scared of you motherfuckers.
Right,
and I'm
right.
like,
Def Jam. Yeah.
It was magic, man. And then of course I remember when Living Color came out and like. Damon Wayans does not get enough credit.
He is
a comedic savant, man. But like now, modern day, I always do my Mount Rushmore as George Carlin, Bill Burr, Chris Rock, and Dave Chappelle. And there's always a rotating fifth, like Patton Oswalt, or like you got Patrice O'Neill, or you got like recently. And I shouted him out on social media because I watched his last special. Deion Cole.
Yeah.
His last few specials are, he don't get enough credit. Front to back. And you know how you watch somebody. I like Chappelle, but his last ones I watched, I just watched them. But Deion Cole, you will laugh through the whole thing.
No, I agree with you 100%. I didn't see his last one, but the one before, I agree 100%.
In addition to his stand-up, he's a great writer, man.
Yeah. He reminds me of Damon Wayans in that way, too, to where, like, he's silly.
Mm-hmm.
He can be silly and he can be serious.
Yeah.
And that's been lost in comedy, especially a lot of black comedy, too. It's kind of like hip-hop where everybody want to be either cool or whatever.
Right.
And people can't be, like,
silly.
Yeah, like handyman. Like, who would do that right now? You know what I mean?
Well, that's me and him. Man, that's crazy. We were talking about that shit just yesterday. We were talking about being more... Like, because if we were talking, we'd do some silly shit to explain it on stage. Why the fuck aren't we doing that on stage?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Commit why aren't you joke. Being like that?
And commit doing, to the bit. Somebody else is telling me that. You got to sell it. Because that's the thing. Yeah. When you first start doing the bit, it's going to be that silence. Yeah. And you're going to be like, fuck. And then you start. But it's like, stay in it.
Yeah.
Stay in it.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes you're not bombing. Mm-mm. Sometimes they're just paying attention.
Right. Yeah.
And just because you didn't find the punchline yet doesn't mean that it's over. And so, and I've had times where you ultimately don't get to a big joke or it don't reach this big climax or crescendo, but still at the end they're like, oh man, that was so insightful. So you commit to the bit, dude.
So going off of that, so do you write or you go up there and just try and float?
I write, but I rarely write out a joke verbatim just because it's I used to joke around, and not that I'm like smart, but like my brain works faster than my hand does. So like if I'm writing, by the time I get to the end of a joke, my mind might have changed a couple tags here and I have wasted so much paper doing that shit. Yeah. And on top of that, I'm just lazy too. So what I do is I'll have a, you know, recently the election. Okay, yeah, Trump got elected. Ooh, it was a lot of Latinos voted for Trump. There was a lot of poor people and black men who voted for Trump. Yeah, you know what I mean? And then I was like, I don't have a punchline, but just go up with that. Okay. And then the jokes will come.
Okay.
And then I was able to get some stuff, and some stuff I wasn't. But you just have that outline.
Okay, yeah, and just flow with it.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But that's the thing too.
It's you be free.
You got to be willing to bomb though, and that hurts.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's painful as fuck.
Well, and one thing too.
But it all depends on what mood you're in, because sometimes you don't care.
Oh
sometimes
yeah,
you don't care.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, John, but I've seen you several times, and you're like comfortable with shit.
Yeah.
Well, it's the duck and water thing. It's panic under the water. But on top of the water, I'm like,
yeah.
But yeah, the legs are like this under the water. No, you just man, can't see
you,
it.
You're like quick witted, and when you said your influence, it made sense to me because I see that. If I didn't know any better, I would be like, yeah, he definitely wanted the Rock Brothers. He wanted one of the Chris I'm talking about. He definitely wanted them brothers. But I see that you're comfortable and you can, you sort of like, what is it called when you rip off the headlines?
Just oh, topical?
Yeah,
like,
topical.
Yeah.
How did you find that to be like one of your realms?
I think it's because I always talk like that anyway. I've always like, you know how like, I'm sure we all do this because we're the funny friends, you know what I mean?
Right.
So when you would be in your friend groups, and we would just always talk about what was going on. Again, it's one of the reasons I love Tupac, because he would always talk about what's going on. Whatever is in the cultural zeitgeist, like, if there's an elephant in the room, I'm talking about it, you know what I mean? Like, why are we not talking about this obvious thing that we're all feeling, but people feel like they're...
I stay out of politics.
Yeah, me too.
I hate politics. Even within my family, like when I'm trying, you already know, like, I'm just like, I don't get any of this. You guys, like, it's just, why?
Well, I think part of it, too, for me is growing up poor, black, like, divorced parents, a single mom, two sisters, so my mom already had me into, like, just being aware of women's issues and stuff like that, so I was always hyper aware of that. Okay. And then she was a reader, so I became a reader, and then very interested in just history and black history, and then through that, the intersection of, like, just of history and politics is inevitable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Trust me, no, I get it, and I understand, and I agree, and I think about people and how things are in the world, but when it comes to politics, I fucking tune out.
Well, you can't get lost in the weeds, because the problem is, it is very dogmatic, and people do get into...
When it comes to teams, it's weird.
Right.
Don't ask people.
Because people won't acknowledge the bad shit on their side, but they'll only acknowledge the bad on the other side. That's why I joke about it. I vote Democrat, but, like, they suck. You know what I mean? And I'm just not a Republican just because they're openly racist. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the thing about them, though, is they do win. You know what I mean? And there is a pragmatism to them that I get, that some people get. But at the same time, like, when people... like criticize Democrats. I'll be like, but no, I'm not defending them because they don't do half the shit.
Hi, I'm Darren Marlar, host of the Weird Darkness podcast. I want to talk about the most important tool in my podcast belt. Spreaker is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to record, host, and distribute your show everywhere, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. But the real game changer for me was Spreaker's monetization. Spreaker offers dynamic ad insertion. That means you can automatically insert ads into your episodes. No editing required. And with Spreaker's programmatic ads, they'll bring the ads to you, and you get paid for every download. This turned my podcasting hobby into a full-time career. Spreaker also has a premium subscription model where your most dedicated listeners can pay for bonus content or early access, adding another revenue stream to what you're already doing. And the best part, Spreaker grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or running a full-blown podcast network, Spreaker's powerful tools scale effortlessly as your show grows. So if you're ready to podcast like a pro and get paid while doing it, check out Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker.com.
I want to make it. I'm just like, they're the default bitch at 2 in the morning at the bar. It's like, I don't like you. I just need pussy. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like Democrats. It's just that.
You're rooting the horn for
them. Right. It's two people at the bar. It's a dude and an ugly bitch. And I'll fuck the ugly bitch. Nothing against gay people. But it's the same. But it's the same with politics. It's only two parties, and I can only fuck with one. I can't fuck you, so.
You know what? And I didn't say this last time we were talking about it, but I'm going to bring it up because it irritates the shit out of me. All these people that are adults and who are grown and smart and in every job and every organization, they talk about teamwork, this and that. Okay, these are the top two candidates who are running for president. Okay, this one won, this one didn't. Now that's the vice president. That's how that should work. You guys got to work together. Now you guys.
Oh, that wouldn't happen.
I understand. I know it shouldn't, but these are the best two people we got to run the country, right? Yeah. Out of everybody, these are the best two people we have.
If they did it like that, they would automatically start running different people.
I know. But you see how that would be fucking.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, like, well.
It's kind of like ranked choice voting. People talk about that like. You would have a better variety of people in it because basically, I don't 100% understand it, but basically, if we had that, it would be whoever came in second. Yeah. They weren't just the automatic loser, but if they got enough of the vote, that they would have some type of say in something. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It ain't necessarily this winner. Take all type of thing.
No, it's
you bring everybody in the fold because everybody voted.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just because this person won, that it's millions of people on this side. Like, well, what the fuck?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So when you got into the comedy game, John, did you say I'm going to just rock these mics? No, Diddy. And all these comedy rooms. Was that the plan, or did you say I want to do some acting? I want to do some hosting. I want to put on shows. Because I left being a host out of your intro, and I'm sorry about that.
Yeah,
he also
a
host.
Yeah, that's what we met.
I met him at hosting an open mic at the Helium.
Hatfield.
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
Yeah,
that was. I was actually thinking about getting another room going, but as you guys know, any production it could be exhausting.
Yeah.
And then working with comics, y'all trying to get me like, and we're cool. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, wait.
No, it's exhausting.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I had a room and I didn't get to you yet, but I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
But
rewind. What were we just saying?
I was going to say like, what was the intention like when you started doing?
Comedy.
Oh yeah, well yeah. I
know you host.
I wanted to just get up at as many mics as I could, so I can get good at being a stand-up and ultimately just be a touring comedian. And then everything that could happen in the periphery, like acting, getting into writing.
Nice.
Shout out to Ramon Rivas. He always tells me that because he actually made it out. I mean, he goes to New York and LA regularly. He met every single comic that comes through. He knows them, and we'll be hanging out. But he tells me that, like, even if you're not working on a movie per se, learn how to write a script.
Yeah.
Learn the structure of writing.
Yeah.
Learn how to write an episode. Learn how to write different characters from different points of view, because that will not only just inform your comedy when you get there, when you get through the door, you can know how to navigate those spaces, and you can just be. Just better equipped to do your job. You know what I mean?
So are you like...
So I do want to ultimately do other stuff. Comedy.
Okay, so you're not opposed to acting?
Not at all.
That's writing, writer, you know, and acting and all that stuff. So, like, I haven't really seen you in a lot of skits. Like, are you opposed to doing skits or?
That is hard because, like, I don't know. Being on stage, even if I'm bombing, I think it's the in the momentness of it. Mm-hmm. It's the finality of filming something and then just pushing it out there and you can't touch it up at all and it's just out there in the ether. And I finally started like cutting up clips and putting them on YouTube. So I do have that and on Instagram so people can see me. But as far as me doing like a skit, I do have to get better with that just because I don't know if I have the ability to make that be consistent.
Gotcha. I mean, it doesn't really have to be consistent, too. It could be about whatever, you know, whatever. I mean, because, you know, it's
trust
like...
Trust me, it's a lot of analysis paralysis I got going. I'm just overthinking the shit out of it.
100%. You know? I agree. Yeah, because you think about it too much, and then you don't do it. Trust me.
I
had to get over that. Yeah. Especially with this, doing the podcast, I was like...
We wanted it to be super perfect. I'm like, look, dog, we'll get it.
Yeah.
Eventually, man. Let's just keep rolling. Eventually, just keep building.
I found that too. You learn as you go because you ain't going to never know.
You're never going to like it.
So that's what helped with the stand-up is like listening to clips and like me seeing every bad habit, looking down, closing my eyes.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Scratching my head too much.
Now you're talking. Yeah. Because... we went through that.
Yeah.
And I'm
still going through a little bit.
Absolutely. Because it was like, you know, because I hated doing the same material. I hated it. But I started doing the same material, but each time I went on stage, I was working on different things. I was working on not playing with the cord. I'm OCD. If the cord is twisted up, I'm unraveling the cord, forgetting I'm on stage.
That bitch rolled up around in his fucking hand with the mic. I'm looking at you. Like,
I be forgetting I'm on stage because it bothers me if it's coiled. Pacing. But it's like you know, like I often say when I look at like you, you're like
poised,
leaning on the mic stand, looking at the crowd, looking at everybody. I had to work up to that.
I did too. And I'm still in my head. You know what I mean? Like I said, it's a very duck and water thing. Yeah. I've heard people say like, "Ooh, you look so relaxed." Am I though?
I'll tell you what. And this happens to me all the every fucking time. I'm so nervous, but as soon as they say my name, it kind of goes the fuck away.
It's a lot of that.
It goes away because then you start then you're doing your thing. You know what I mean?
I do have a thing though. Like I was at Hilarities this past weekend at a club in Cleveland.
Flex.
And I was I dropped the name. I was just hosting. Flex. I didn't have
it. Hosting's a big thing, man. That's the look, I used to not want to even do it, but that's a huge thing.
It's a good skill set to learn how to do because it helps you because you go through a bunch of different things. Because at first I would just want to crush and just bury somebody, but then after a while it's like no, you have to realize this isn't about you.
It's not
you have to bring the crowd up and don't do all your like I got my dick sucked jokes. Don't tie a hand behind your back, but it teaches you how to be an overall better comedian.
That's where crowd work was.
Yeah. But I was there, and like sometimes on stages like that, where it's bigger and there's more people in front of you and there's all these lights to where you can't even see everybody because it's like... I'll literally feel like I'm about to pass out.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God, dude. Oh, you talking about holding the mic? Like, sometimes, like, when I'm in bigger places like that, if you see me holding the mic stand, I'm getting kind of, like, I feel like I'm about to
fall. Oh, dog, I seen you in the Goro. You killed it. What are you talking about?
It's in here.
I see you rolling up, smashing it.
Yeah, but it's in here. Luckily, it came out good. Luckily, I didn't pass out. Yeah. But
I get it. 100%.
Think about like what we're doing now. I'm sure like you've been with friends and stuff, and the next day you're like, damn, I was fucked up. And then I've had friends be like, I ain't never seen you drunk. I was like, oh, I was drunk. It's a thing like that.
Unfortunately, it's a thing of playing a black room, say like maybe a Skeets, this is a bar in Cleveland, You know where Skeets is? You ever heard of Skeets?
I played that. Was that, is that the one?
93rd.
Oh shit! No, I didn't. I didn't play that one.
So that's like a black room versus a white room or a mixed crowd. Like, do you have a preference, or do you feel like you could conquer all of them?
I could do them all, but like it's like ultimately, as a black comic, you want to do a black room. Because, right. I mean, if you came, it's like being a Cleveland comic, but and you could work anywhere but Cleveland. It's like, well, what the fuck are you doing? You know what I mean? But, I mean, comics will tell you, like, the best audience is a mixed audience, and black audiences are harder, and white audiences are easy. But, honestly, I got used to, the first clubs that I worked was improv. Now it's Funny Bone. But essentially, that's the black club in Cleveland. And so
he's throwing them out.
Another flex.
That's what I like.
It's a short amount of things I can count on this hand.
I love it because that shows your growth, and I love it. Congratulations, sir. That's a good thing.
And
man.
Shout out to John Bruden, B. Titty, and Chris Harvey. These are people who spoke highly of me behind my back to other people. Nice. That got me up there. So we
see the same thing.
But I got used to working that, and then it was like, ooh, I love working these black rooms. And then I got to Hilarities, and I was working that, and white rooms tend to be, quote, easier. But when I would be at Hilarities, like, you would get a laugh, but then it would come right back down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, so it was more like obligatory. Like, they're nice enough to laugh, but. Mm-hmm. The thing I always say is sometimes it's harder to get a black audience on your side, but once you do, they rolling with you, and you riding a wave.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I like all crowds, but ultimately you do want to be able to work your demographic, and I don't care if you're a woman, you should be able to kill in front of women, because a lot of women don't like women comedians, and you know what I mean. So I say be able to work your demographic, and then everything else is just a plus.
Okay, so you mentioned like being a Cleveland comic, and I'm an advocate. You know, when I ran a small room, but we had some people from Dave Chappelle's camp come to my room, I looked them dead in their face, and I told them, I said, I'll put my Cleveland comics up against anybody Dave Chappelle got.
Oh, Cleveland, we got some heat.
We got heat.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that till I started working these clubs and people would come in from out of town. I'm like, you from New York? you were regular at this place? Yeah. Or you worked the Comedy Store?
I'll tell you where I see them.
You at the Laugh Factory?
I said that, and another John disagreed with me, but I'm like, well, he said other places too, and I agree. Like, you know, of course Detroit got heat. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, maybe Buffalo got heat, but it's like, man, Cleveland, we got that heat. Yeah. I personally think Cleveland against everybody, we'll dominate. That's just what I feel.
I think we could too. I think one of the things that makes you funny is adversity, and that whole Cleveland against the world thing is so true. I mean, even the Cavs right now, shout out, we 13-0, and we barely getting any press or anything for that. It's always something, the shit we go through, we've been through with the Browns, even like the whole history of this city, the racial strife, the jobs going away, and even the weather, man. Like, with it being just cold or just hot as fuck in the summer, it creates a certain type of person.
Yeah, it does.
You gotta go to work through all of it.
Yeah, you just...
You learn how to work.
You learn how to work hard, and you learn how to play hard.
I've always said this, and it's like, I've been to two places, with, you know, me and my girlfriend at the time. One was L.A., and the other one was Canada. And someone actually told us they knew that we wasn't from there by the look we had on our face. Now that says something. That says something. By the look we have on our face, they knew we wasn't from there.
Were you like this?
No. We have a broad.
We're the opposite.
It's not Cleveland.
No, we got a look that we don't recognize. I recognize it when I watch Judge Lynn Taller. Divorce court, remember?
Yeah.
Divorce court. From her walk from her chambers to the bench, that's Cleveland all day. She got her purse. She got that growl on her face. That's Cleveland. Just pay attention. Next time you see some old episodes of her walking from the bench, from her chambers to the bench, she got a Cleveland growler. We got a look about ourselves.
My cousin told me that he moved down south, and he was like, one of the first things he noticed, he was like, all the women smile at you. He's talking, and black women, all the women smile at you. People just throw up peace signs and say hi. He was like, everybody was like super friendly. And then I sent him something on Instagram, and he was like, dudes in Cleveland, like, I've been a lot of places, and he in Tampa now, and he like, I only see that aggression in black men in Cleveland. Don't get me wrong. I know we got LA and Chicago. I'm not trying to go for a badge of the grimiest thing. I'm not saying that.
No, I dig it.
But I've talked to people who've been out of town, and they're like, it's a particular type of. I remember when I lived in Columbus, which is 2 hours away. Right. Like, and shout out to Columbus. Columbus is cool. I'm not shitting on them, but like, that is a world away. When I met the type of people down there, I was just like, it was just really like, it was really odd to me. Cleveland's a whole different thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, like you said.
Hi, I'm Darren Marlar, host of the Weird Darkness podcast. I want to talk about the most important tool in my podcast belt. Spreaker is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to record, host, and distribute your show everywhere, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. But the real game changer for me was Spreaker's monetization. Spreaker offers dynamic ad insertion. That means you can automatically insert ads into your episodes. No editing required. And with Spreaker's programmatic ads, they'll bring the ads to you, and you get paid for every download. This turned my podcasting hobby into a full-time career. Spreaker also has a premium subscription model where your most dedicated listeners can pay for bonus content or early access, adding another revenue stream to what you're already doing. And the best part, Spreaker grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or running a full-blown podcast network, Spreaker's powerful tools scale effortlessly as your show grows. So if you're ready to podcast like a pro and get paid while doing it, check out Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker.com.
I've been welcome, but I'm just saying that, like you said, there's a distinct.
Well, I grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania, my whole life, so it's the same goddamn mentality. Yeah. On the river, on the lake, in this bitch, you know.
From trips from down south, I used to spend summers in Georgia and coming back to Cleveland when I was a kid. And I've actually witnessed like people riding mowers, and you drive down the street, they'll stop and wave at you like they know you for years. And then you get back to Cleveland, and I'm like, "Hey, how you doing?" They're like, "You know him?
Why
are you talking to him? Yeah. You don't know him? Like, that's Cleveland.
What you looking at me for? What?
Yeah, like you don't know him."
I was coming here, and I was turning, and this dude was in the street, and he had the right way because he had the walk thing, but you know, traffic is getting all, and the lights change so quick. Yeah. I'm like, let me get through here, and he just, I'm walking through the foot. He yelling at us.
I'm walking over here.
Like, yeah, tension is high, man.
Yeah,
tension is high, man.
The fuck.
Yeah. So basically, all right. So I know you played like the big spots here. So when you
go ahead.
When you travel, do you like? Is it like some of the jokes that you try here? Do they like kill the other states?
Jokes are pretty much universal. I mean, of course, like I got a lot of Cleveland jokes, and of course you're not gonna do them because that ain't gonna translate. But most of them translate pretty well. And that's weird too, like. Because I was thinking that when I first did jokes in other places, like, I wonder how they go hear this. But a joke's a joke. I mean, you might have certain tweaks, you know what I mean? It's like when you get sexually active, you know, and then you get to another woman, you know, you're doing the same shit. She might like it a little bit this way.
Right.
But they all want to be choked.
Just a tweak.
Choke me. Play on my clitoris. Flip me over. They all want the same thing, even though they think, I'm different. Sure you are. Sure.
I ain't not like most.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying,
Jay? Oh, yeah. I just wanted to, like, because, you know, I'm always interested in this. You know, you started in your 30s.
Or, yeah, 36.
So, what mic did you find? Like, where did you...
Funny stop.
Like, okay.
So, Funny Stop, rest in peace, Pete.
Yeah.
Shout out to Funny Stop. So, I was talking to my girl. I had just got fired from my job, and I'm still kind of self-sabotaging.
Okay.
Okay. Because she was one of the couple people that I told three people that I wanted to do comedy. It was such a secret. It was so weird. It was like coming out of the closet. I mean, I don't know how it is to be gay, but it was just this thing that I only told a few people, and I would have just been mortified if anybody knew. It just felt so juvenile. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. At that age,
you want to go do comedy?
Fuck up.
Yeah.
So, and shout out to her, we still together, nice. And she was like, I was just like, I tried all these places, and there's not even anywhere in Cleveland to go, and then she got on her phone, and 30 seconds later, look, there's a comedy contest at Funny Stop, and nice. Grand Hall of Fall, we should go, and it was on from there.
Nice. Dope. So yeah. You went there.
And I only went there. So when I started, okay. It wasn't that I started, wow. And then I started doing mics. I went. I initially didn't get passed to be on the
show
the competition or whatever.
But
I still remember I was walking back to the table because my family had came out and I had finally told everybody I'm gonna do this thing and they're like, oh yeah, John, you should do it. Okay. So I did okay, but you know, not good enough. And then I'm all dejected and I'm walking back after the show and I remember Pete coming through the crowd like, come back next week.
Nice.
And one little piece of air.
Yeah.
And after that, I would go every week. Nice. Every Wednesday, they would do the show. And I was lucky. I started in March, April. And by the time the contest got to the finals, I won in June.
Nice. At least he won.
He never won.
And then it was a toss up.
Always a finalist. It was
a toss up.
And but, next week I'm in the finals, but we got to do a show. We got to do a podcast, so I can't even go.
So it was a toss-up?
Yeah, a toss-up.
It was a toss-up between me and shout-out Jasmine Carter, which is, she's on the moon right now. She's out in California, like, just doing everything. She's an amazing comic. Like, millions of views, followers, and all this other stuff.
Nice.
But it was, honestly, I think maybe I just have more people come up. Because everybody said it was between me and her, and she's amazing. Okay. So I'm not bringing her up to take anything from her.
I've never even heard of her, so that's good that you said that.
Oh my God, look her up. She's amazing.
Jasmine Carter.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, big on YouTube, on Instagram.
Yeah, see, I got that shirt. I made that shirt down there. The funny stuff.
We was
hoping to have some John Armstrong merch, but
we gotta get it. We gotta get it on the rotation.
Well, I got the special. Look me up.
We'll see, because I'm glad you said the funny stuff, man, because ever since we've done the podcast, that's where I started at.
Yeah.
Because I looked online. It said something like $2 over here in Parma. So I showed up there one night, and there was, like, people playing trivia. I'm like, well, there's no open mic here. So I went back up.
I did that, too. I looked up somewhere, and it was some bar in Lakewood, and I go there, and nobody's there. So it was obvious, like, maybe it used to be one, they never changed it in the thing.
The cool thing is I was ready to do it. I had something in mind and I didn't, so I was like, all right, well, let me go. And I looked up and there was a funny song. I was like, well, let me go check it out. So I went and I sat for like, well, you know, you gotta go check it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I went and I watched and I was like, okay, I can do this. Let me go home and write some shit. And then I went back and then I went up, and when was it? June 2019 was the first time.
When COVID happened.
Yeah. Well, then I just couldn't get off of work. Because it was Wednesday nights, and I used to work for a sweeping company, and I couldn't get off nights. You know, I'm like, hey, can you get somebody I can do something during the day? You know, let me go out. So I quit that job. I quit that job.
Like, so I got shit to do.
Yes. And I went back in December of 2020, and that's when I started doing it, like, regularly.
Nice.
Yeah. So Funny Stop was the first place,
And it's really cool to be able to start in an actual club. Because when people tell me, like, starting at, like, bar shows, which not shitting on bar shows, but I think it would have warped my perception of what I'm... You know, like, you ever do so many, like, open mics that, like, you have to be a little more bombastic to get people's attention? So, but then that becomes your barometer for what's funny. Then you get in front of a paid audience. You go, I was getting my dicks on everybody.
Well,
I'm like, whoa, hey, whoa. Not necessarily that's what it is.
No, I get it. Because
it was better to be in a structured environment.
No, 100%. Because when I went, you know, I was there. It was before he started doing it. Because we used to work together at a different job. And I left that job. And so then I started doing comedy. He had called me. What are you up to? I'm like, I'm doing this shit.
Yeah.
So we came down and we started at the Funny Stop. And then, you know, I was like, well, let me find something else. And Thursday, I went to Hatfields. I went there, met you, did it a couple times there. But then it was just, like, hard to get, you know, two nights a week. I'm married at the time. Yeah. I'm still going through it, obviously. So, you start finding different places, and then we went to LVT, and then they started bumping us. And it's like, what the fuck? And that's, I ain't going to say who's running it. But it was just like, this. What the fuck are we doing here? And
yeah.
So, like, that taste, I'm like, no, I'm cool with clubs. I'm cool with this. I'm cool with the funniest, you know. And he was going, he was getting kind of, like, cool with the funny stuff, you know, because just to deal with other comics. And you know what I mean?
That was cool, too, yeah. Getting to meet the other comics.
Yeah.
Getting to see other people. And, like, when you hang out there, once they let you kind of hang, when you can see a comic on the weekend and see how their early show is versus their late show.
Right.
And just kind of that whole seeing how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It kind of reaffirms you too. You see somebody funny and then you see them before the show and they're nervous. I'm like, you nervous?
Right.
And it's really like, okay.
It's never going away.
You're just like, okay, all right. I'm not crazy. You know what I mean?
I remember I did it. I was hosting for one of the guys there, and he was just like, wow, there's that many people here?
Yeah.
He was like nervous as shit. I'm like, cool.
So it's like basically, like, when you're doing open mics at bars and things like that in front of all comedians, it's really kind of like, you really can't gauge how well your joke is because, I mean, it's not, okay, so I can only speak for myself. If I'm sitting in the audience, it's just because I'm not laughing doesn't mean that I don't think you're funny.
Right, yeah.
I'm looking at it like, oh man, I see where he went with that. Oh, that was good. I'm attentive, but I'm not, you know, sometimes I'm not laughing out loud. And it's kind of hard to gauge your jokes in front of comedians.
Well,
if
you're going to do it at open mic anyway, I think the purpose, and this is what you had to get into your head a lot of times, that it's just a rep. You got to just get it out. You're there.
Or sometimes you just got to hear it come out of your mouth. You know what I mean? How does this just phonetically
sound? Because you're thinking about it, or you wrote it down. Now you just got to get it the fuck out. Yeah, you don't care that these other comics have left. They're all there drinking. You can hear the other motherfuckers on the other side.
Yeah.
Yelling and talking shit. These people ain't paying attention.
Bartender's shaking.
Yeah, they're thinking about going up.
Person who just got off and killed is over here being loud. It's so much of that shit. It's so like, I'm done. So fuck y'all set. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So just go and just focus on getting it out your mouth.
that is the pure reps. Because that was the thing, too. I wasn't one of those, like, comics that was like, I only do club. No, I became like every single open mic I would do. But when I first started, it was just funny stuff. And then after the competition was over, I got my first weekend to host there. I remember it was Josh Volkov. He's still super cool to this day.
Love this,
love that dude.
Yep.
Him and shit. Trying to remember, I forget. Either way, so after that, the next stage that I did was Make 'Em Laugh Monday, John Bruton at the Grog Shop. And
shout out to John Bruton.
Oh yeah, I always tell John, and this ain't me blowing smoke. That is the best room outside of the clubs because he consistently gets a paid audience.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially a black crowd, but sometimes it's a mixed crowd.
That's pretty.
But it's like if you want to put in reps and really gauge jokes, and sometimes it's a harder crowd too.
Yeah.
But that's what makes it fun. Because again, once you get them on your side, that room, if you rock that room, it's.
Shout out to Kevin Ford, bro.
Yeah, shout out to Kevin right now.
Oh my God. Kevin is putting it down, man.
I know, man.
Kevin is putting it down, man.
Yeah.
Every time I just got something, I think I'm going to be back there either later this month or in December. But it's always a good time. And they always set you up right. It's love that place.
Well, see, I always throw this in everybody's ear since you like to like write scripts and shit. Always think about people you have around because Kevin is a character.
Oh yeah, he's hilarious.
You already know he's somebody hilarious. In the neighborhood.
Well, even his natural cadence.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
it's funny. Exactly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So do you have any tours or any shows coming up right now? Because I know you got to go.
I had a show in 5 minutes. I'm doing Southern Tier, which ain't gonna matter when this comes out. But shout out to James O'Brasfield. He does that. That's a bar downtown Cleveland. I don't know if it's monthly or biweekly. And then I got a few independent things up in the air, but nothing big. It's been pretty slim from summer to now. I mean, I'm working every weekend, but a lot of things come together last minute. I'm forgetting something off the top of my head. Like I said, I don't remember the date, but I'm gonna be back at Grog Shop real soon. And then I scheduled something else, but that's up in the air, so I don't want to say it.
We can get your dates off your
website. Oh, yeah, I post everything on my website, www.johnarmstrongcomedian.com. So, yeah, always follow that, look that up, and you'll always see, like, what I got coming. And I've been finally starting to put some of my clips up so you can get kind of a feel for my comedy.
You go on TikTok?
I got to start a TikTok. Yeah. These are all going on Instagram, okay. Facebook. Yeah, but I got to start a TikTok. Yeah.
Hey.
But I'm making that, trying to get that footprint out there. Sorry.
Nice.
Episode of the Midnight Pocket Podcast brought to you in part by the Acumen Paralegal Services. Help you help yourself the legal way. The services that they offer is they help with documents that need to be typed, guardianships, probate, divorce, wills and trusts, complaints, business organization, financial planning, and legal research and writing. Go ahead and give them a call at 216-727-0049 or 216-456-2000. Michelle White will get you right.
That's right. I would like to thank everybody for tuning in. Yo, Jay, where can they find you, man?
Hey, everybody. You can follow me at Justin Fuller Comedy on all platforms.
And I am the underscore great underscore C-O-R-E-E. That's where you can find me, or you can find us both at the Midnight Paco Podcast.
Okay.
Hey. Thank you, John Armstrong, for coming in. Yes, where can they find you?
Dude, thank you all for having me. Again, www.johnarmstrongcomedian.com, and that can direct you to either my Instagram or Facebook or YouTube, which is John Armstrong. And again, John Armstrong Against the World. Please stream it.
Check it out.
A lot of work went into that. Nice. Again, shout out to Ramon Rivas, very good comedian. Travels all around. He produced it, and just he's been patient with my stubborn ass doing this whole thing. So check that out. I put a lot into that, and that's a culmination of a lot of jokes that I was kind of refining over the months and years. So it's nowhere to go but up from here. It's been a lot of positive feedback, and I'm just really excited about the future, because I feel like, you know, sometimes you can get writer's block, which I've had a lot, but I sometimes feel like I don't have enough time to say enough. Even this podcast, I'm like, are we over already? So keep following this podcast. I hope anybody new to me, keep following me follow them. And the future is looking bright.
Yeah. Appreciate you, man.
Hey, before you go, just remember, old to you is new to the world.
Yeah. 100%.
I like that.
Yeah.
Very true.
Peace out!
Midnight Podcast. Midnight Podcast. Midnight Podcast.